Well, not quite. I'll be talking about more than just the Benjamins. Welcome to FinTech Beat, where finance, technology, and policy come together. I'm your host, Chris Brummer, and the future of finance is now. The United States isn't the only country considering a central bank digital currency. In fact, other countries are well ahead of the United States in considering a digital dollar, with the Bahamas already having instituted a functional CBDC, the Sand Dollar, along with the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank, which has released its own digital cash, or DCash. But by far the most significant actor to date in the CBDC conversation is China, which, as the most important trading nation in the world and the second largest economy, has already rolled out a variety of pilot projects aimed at the release of a digital yuan. But the country's efforts have come under enormous scrutiny, with concerns raised as to the privacy afforded holders of the currency and the ultimate aims of the People's Bank of China. Which is why I was delighted to have the opportunity to talk to Mu Chengchun, the Director General of the Digital Currency Institute at the People's Bank of China, at the DC FinTech Week conference that I host every year in Washington. I had the pleasure of doing the interview with John Frost, a senior economist at the Bank for International Settlements and a thought leader on the subject. And as a treat to our listeners, I wanted to share our conversation with you to get an inside perspective on one of the most significant projects in the fintech ecosystem. Here we go, yo. I saw that you sort of listened in a bit, Mu, on the earlier conversation on Asia's innovation path. So maybe it's just worthwhile maybe continuing the theme and asking you, when you look at China's innovation path, how do you see it as being different from that of the United States or the rest of the world?
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, John. And it's my pleasure to be here. For this innovation path, but I believe the most different approach actually adopted by the U.S. and China is the wait-and-see policy. In China, we actually adopting a pilot or a sandbox. It's understood by most of the audience. It's a sandbox approach. That is to put to build up a trial environment to have a pilot program to run it. And after some time, if we can reach a desirable result, then we can roll it out to the whole nation. That's the most frequently adopted approach in China. I think that will be different from US situation. We call it a wait and see policy. So that's why we have Alipay and Tenpay. We have so many big techs in China, which are all raised up by this wait and see policy. So that wait and see policy gave a very friendly environment for the big techs to grow. But of course, from the regulatory part, now after the wait, we have to see, we have to review all the consequences, the pros and cons of those big techs. So now we have a wait enough. And then recently with the regulatory agencies, including the People's Bank of China, the CBRC and CSRC, they have already taken a lot of measures to actually to deal with those consequences of this development of this big techs. Of course, the big techs actually contribute a lot in terms of financial inclusion, in terms of financial innovation, but there are some negatives. Influence or negative impacts. For those negative aspects, we have to make it better to lead them to a right way. So that's why we have so many monopoly measures in place to make those big techs better, make the whole market better. And we'll give a level playing field to the market. So I think that's the biggest difference between US innovation path and Chinese innovation path.
Yeah, that was very much sort of a theme in the earlier panels, particularly the sort of experimentation. That theme was actually introduced with Augustine Karstens at the very outset of sort of the experimentation with fintech more generally, which is perhaps a little bit less the defining characteristic in the United States. But you've introduced the second aspect that we haven't talked about, but I know we will later, the sort of antitrust question. I think that really what the audience is very interested in hearing from you about is a little bit more about the ECNY, the so-called digital yuan, and really what would be the core features of a sort of a digital currency, and what have you been able to? What is it that you'd be able to tell us about its likely operation?
Well, this design of ECNY actually it shares both the features of physical RMB, which is the physical banknotes, such as settle upon payment anonymity, and the features of electronic payment instruments, which are the less costly, highly portable, high efficiency, and hard to counterfeit. So the design of ECNY mainly considers the following features. For example, the identifiable both as account-based and value-based, and also quasi-account-based system. ECNY is account-based and in terms of, you know, account system actually is the most valuable asset of the commercial banks. So it's important for the commercial banks not to abandon their most valuable asset. So that's why, firstly, the ECNY system, ECNY is an account-based system, and also a quasi-account-based system. At the same time, we had to take advantage of the recent technology development, which is a token-based or value-based system. So it has a variable face value and also enable value transfer via token. So we took all the advantage of the incumbent, or we call traditional payment system, and also the in forthcoming new technology. So that's why the ECNY is a hybrid system, both featured with account-based, quasi-account-based, and value-based. And second feature is the non-interest payment. The ECNY is mainly produced as M0, so it treated the same as the physical RMB under M0, which carries and pay no interest. And thirdly, the cost is very low. Consistent with the management of physical RMB, the PBC does not charge any fees from the authorized arbiters and also the end users for exchange and circulation services. And of course, the authorized arbiters do not charge any fees from the individual users for the ECNY-related services either. And of course, there's other features such as settlements upon payment. Since since it's token based or value based, according to the settlement finality, the ECNY is loosely coupled with account banking account. So the payment through ECNY wallet are settled upon payment, the action of payment, and also we provide anonymity, or we call it a managed anonymity function. The ECNY follow the principle of anonymity for small value and traceable for high value. And we attach great importance to protecting the personal information and privacy. So it aims to balance or strike a balance between combating the illicit transactions, for example, the money laundering and tax financing, and also to protect the privacy or personal information of the general public. We adopted a variety of technology to protect or safeguard the safety, including the digital certificate system, digital signature, and encrypted storage to prevent double spending, illegal duplication and counterfeit, and also to achieve irreversible transactions. So a multiple layer security system have been initially established to mitigate the potential risks. Of course, the reason why is a smart money. It has programmability capability. So it could be realized by deploying smart contracts without impeding its legal tender functions. Under the premise of security and compliance, the feature enable self-executing payment according to predefined conditions of terms agreed between two parties so as to facilitate the business model and innovation. Those are the basic features of the ECNY. With those basic features, we could provide a wider access to the central bank money, and it could provide a level playing field to the market participants. And also, we could reduce the competition with bank deposits. So we could mitigate the risks of disintermediation. So those are the basic features. Thank you. Back to you.
Thanks, Changchun. So, countries we've noticed are thinking about CBDCs for many different reasons. The motivations differ according to the characteristics of the countries. And we're wondering if you could tell the audience a little bit about what the problems are that the ECNY plans to solve. Is it primarily a response to market developments, like the dominance of the big techs that you talked about before? Or are there specific opportunities that you see in the Chinese context?
Well, this question is related to the drivers about the development of ECNY. firstly, the reason or the drivers behind the ECNY is to, firstly, to improve the financial inclusion. Secondly, is to improve the efficiency of the central bank payment system with wider access and stronger capacity. And thirdly, is to provide a backup or redundancy for the retail payment system. And the first, of course, is to improve the financial inclusion, is to diversify the forms of cash provided to the general public by the central bank, to satisfy the general public's demand for digital cash and support the financial inclusion. The ECNY system will make financial services more accessible, providing fiat currency for a large population in various scenarios. Those without bank accounts could enjoy basic financial services provided via ECNY wallets. For example, for those population in remote areas and poor areas, they could open a digital wallet without the support of a traditional bank account. And of course, the foreign residents temporarily traveling to China, they can open a digital wallet to meet daily payment needs without opening a domestic bank account. So in addition, the ECNY, as I mentioned, is settled upon payment. The small business and related parties can improve their liquidity management while enjoying more convenient payment services. Of course, the second reason is to improve the efficiency of the central bank payment system. And in recent years, there is a trend that the central banks are improving their central bank payment system by including more participants and prolong the service hours and also improve the efficiency. Some of the central banks actually trying to do that by building up a fast payment system, while the Chinese, or our people from China, are trying to make those improvements by introduce the CBDC in China. And thirdly, to provide a backup redundancy for the retail payment system. As you may know, we have two big giants that already dominate the whole retail market. But problem is, if there is something bad happen to them, either financially or technically, definitely we are going to have a significant impact, negative impact on the retail payment service market. Retail actually significantly impact the daily life of the general public. So that's why we should have a backup system to guarantee there's no financial disability risks if there's something goes wrong. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, it was important and interesting, obviously, that you again really confirmed, you know, like an account based a system, and then walking through just sort of your logic with redundancies and the larger role for the ECNY. Here in the States, the project has attracted some skepticism. As to the ultimate intention and aims of a digital yuan. And you had mentioned the managed anonymity. Maybe you could go a step further and just sort of explain to us what that concept means, and are the privacy measures that are taken, are they any different from how it would operate internationally versus domestically?
Well, that's actually the question is about two parts. One is the managed anonymity. The other one is the internationalization of RMB. So I will answer the first part firstly. The privacy actually is one of the core issues in our mind, which is concern us ourselves a lot when we design the ECNY. So as I mentioned, we have to strike a balance between protecting the privacy of the general public and combating those illegal transactions. Both aspects are same important to a CBDC. We cannot ignore any one of them. So finally, we come up with an idea that is a principle, actually, is a managed anonymity. That is to be specific, that is anonymity for small value and traceable for high value. Firstly, the least privileged wallet, we call it the fourth category of the wallet, can be opened merely with a phone number, either a domestic phone number or foreign phone number. While the, as you may know, before the electronic payment system, the Chinese commercial banks and the PSPs, they are required to collect and process every personal data on the individuals during the onboarding process or before engaging any certain business transactions with them. But we only collect a phone number only for these least privileged wallet. So that's the fourth category of the digital wallet is anonymous, even to the PBC under the current legal system. Because, you know, we recently introduced, the Chinese government introduced enforced the personal information protection law. Under that law, the telecom companies cannot release any information, any identity information to any third parties, including the central bank. So the central bank, the PBC, cannot access, including the authorized operators, which is the second tier organizations. They cannot retrieve or access to the ID information behind that phone number. So the PBC can only access the ECNY transactions across institutions, because we are taking care of all the across institutions transactions. And given any transaction is illicit, in which case the law agency, the law enforcement agency could retrieve data with legal warrant from the telecom companies. So that's for the anonymous digital wallets. And secondly, the function for pushing sub-wallet to the authorized online merchants will ensure the safety of customers' personal information by encryption and tokenization. That's to say, the ECNY system collects the least transaction information comparing with traditional electronic payment system. So that will actually apply to all the users. So the concern actually personally I have actually is how to effectively prevent and combat money laundering, terror financing, and tax evasion under the effective anonymous ECNY system. So this actually, there's a big misunderstanding about the anonymity issue of the ECNY system.
Money is the ultimate consumer-facing product. We all know it, we all use it, and whatever governments do, they have to grapple with not only security and economic considerations, but also the very needs of the people using it. Obviously, the story of the digital yuan has yet to be completed, and an important part of that story will likely involve the question of internationalization. That is, to what extent not only the people in China may be expected to use the currency, but also foreigners. And it's here where not only China, but any country using a CBDC will face a wider set of considerations that touch not only on a country's domestic needs, but also international expectations and standards. Now, what these international expectations and standards will be are still very much up for grabs, but they will impact the very future of digital currencies, regardless as to which country is ultimately sponsoring them. It's going to be fascinating watching how it all plays out. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'd love to get your feedback. If you'd like to get in touch, just hit me up at Chris Brummer DR. That's at CHRISBRUMMERDR. We'd love to hear from you.